And welcome back to Sex, Scandal, and Shenanigans. My name is Adrienne, and I'll be your host. We'll be covering today's episode on Hephaestion of Macedon, as well in conjunction with Alexander the Great. Continuing on our adventures in ancient Greece, we still have olive oil, Olympic gods, and massive monuments to the favorites. Before diving into Hephaestion's story, we have to do our definitions of a mistress, or in this particular case, a favorite. So let's dive. As per Cambridge Dictionary, mistress or a favorite is a woman who is having a sexual relationship with a married man. My contextual definition to a mistress is a woman having an extramarital relationship with a man. Not necessarily married. But in this particular case, we are not discussing a male-female relationship. We'll be discussing same-sex, so a male-male relationship. As usual, this podcast discusses topics of sex, sexual assault, religion. Listener discretion is advised. Let's discuss today's character. We do know that Hephaestion's father was Thor, who was a nobleman and courtier of Philip II of Macedon. He's coming from a privileged background. What we also know is that not everything's going to have concrete dates. We are just working with circa and in or around or about. So because he was part of the noble class, he was able to then be educated with the noble class. He was also educated by Aristotle with Alexander the Great. It becomes just important in general. Like I said, we do know that he was born around in and around 356 BCE in Pella, which is now located in Turkey. But he grew up in Macedon and became a contemporary and close confidant and friend of Alexander II of Macedon, son of Philip II of Macedon. In and around 343 BCE, it would have been commonplace for Hephaestion to become a page within the Macedonian court. It can be implied here that this would be where Hephaestion may have first initially met Alexander. There's limited information on his familial background, his early years. Classical education for upper class or nobility sons would have included writing, rhetoric, debate, diplomatic strategies, and learning military strategies and warfare. Let's discuss Hephaestion's military career. His initial fighting or war experience was against the Thracians around 342 BCE. Now, if you're still interested, you can kind of go back to the Phryne episode where they did invade the Theban / Thracian / Thespiae areas. They are contemporaries. There was also another campaign that he was involved in. It was the Danube campaign from Philip II and Battle of Chaeronea. C-H-A-E-R-O-N-E-A. Chaeronea. I'm sorry if I butchered that. As we are aware, Alexander became the Great due to his part as his military prowess, including not only conquering the Greek city-states, but also Persia. Hephaestion played a major military and diplomatic role in regards to Alexander's successful conquering of Persia and other campaigns. In 333 BCE, Alexander was heading to Phoenicia. Hephaestion was then ordered to supplant a puppet leader in Sidon, modern-day Lebanon. He was authorized by Alexander to appoint a new Sidonian leader. The man he chose was distantly related to the Sidonian royal family, but was noted by the locals to be a good and honest man. The man he chose, Abdalonymous. Regardless, guy's name, very hard to say, but he was chosen and he was a successful leader of the Sidonian people, which also then entrusted and reaffirmed Alexander's trust in Hephaestion. Suffice to say, in the majority of the missions given to Hephaestion by Alexander, Alexander had immense trust in Hephaestion, and again, majority of the results suited Alexander's conquests and political gains. While we know from multiple sources, including longtime friend Plutarch and other ancient and modern scholars, we can assert that there was immeasurable trust between the longtime friends. Let's see if things get sexy. Aristotle, while their tutor during their adolescence at the Miza, M-I-E-Z-A, a location where Aristotle held his lectures and teachings for Alexander, Hephaestion, and other contemporaries. Aristotle essentially says of their relationship, one soul abiding in two bodies. Statement there describes the most healthily dependent relationship one can imagine. Now, don't get me wrong, I adore my best friend. Hi, Anthony. Hi, Rose. But my relationship with them is not so tightly entwined that my soul is theirs and their soul is mine. I say that with the most loving way possible. I know them, they know me, but we went to college together. We didn't fight on battles. Or we didn't fight on the battlefield. Anyway, a story about how entwined they were is recounted when they met the Queen of Persia, Sisigamis, who was the mother of Darius III. He becomes important a little bit later. After the Battle of Issus, I-S-S-U-S, not to be confused with the religious military cult Isis, I-S-I-S, Sisigamis speaks to who she thought was Alexander, pleading for mercy, when in fact she was speaking to Hephaestion. Alexander responded to her thusly, "You are not mistaken, mother. This man too is Alexander." From here and previously inferred, the affection between Hephaestion and Alexander was never not apparent. They were, in essence, devoted to one another, on and off the field of battle. British ancient historian Paul Cartledge states that Hephaestion was Alexander's alter ego. There is speculation, at best, that the two besties may have been lovers. As stated before, evidence is hard to find because nothing concrete from the 4th century has been verified as to their private confidences. We do know that they did speak to each other in private, but again, we don't know what really happened in private. Like Vegas. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. What happens on the battlefield tent stays in the battlefield tent. Plutarch, our friend from the 1st century CE, and another writer, Arrian of Nicomedia, he's a Greek writer, comment that their relationship between Hephaestion and Alexander was only as friends. Hephaestion was also given the epithet Philo-Alexandros, which was given to him by Alexander, but this also has the potential for two meanings. We do know that Philos or Philos means friend in Greek, but we also, while it may mean friend, there is an underlying connotation of the term that is defined as lovers of a homoerotic or sexually nuanced definition. So it could be more of an intimate term, you're friends with benefit, or just friend. There's too much speculation. I can't make that determination. That's something you would have to find out for yourself if you're interested. Again from Arrian and Plutarch, Alexander and Hephaestion have identified themselves as the newer versions, at least at the time, of Achilles and Patroclus. Of course, you know who Achilles is. It's Alexander. Do you know who Patroclus is? Hephaestion. Now, the men could have identified themselves as Achilles and Patroclus, but also without the sexual connotation, which are the opinions of Thomas Martin, an American classicist and philologist. Telling you, I'm learning new words. Apparently, a philologist is someone who studies literary, oral, and written records in and from their original form. I'm never going to do that because I don't speak Greek. It's all Greek to me. I was wondering when I was going to make that joke. Another note we should touch upon is homosexuality and bisexuality in ancient Greece. Before I continue, I am not a sex expert. I don't care. I am only here to discuss the story of Hephaestion and Alexander and their relationship. The acceptance of homosexuality and even homosocial relationships was prevalent during the Hellenistic age in ancient Greece. It would not be uncommon for men to have a sexual and social relationship with each other. According to law and history professor Ava Durrell, she teaches, I believe, at the University of Milan, notes that bisexuality was widely permitted and not frowned upon in ancient Greek society. She also states homosexuality was not an exclusive choice. Loving another man was not an option, out of the norm, nor was it different or somehow deviant. Just part of life experience. It should be noted that not all city-states may have been as on par that lifestyle. Macedon was. I also think the homosexuality stance of their relationship keeps getting reinforced because of fiction writers such as Mary Reno's book Fire from Heaven from 1969. And also, just so you're aware, that book inspired Oliver Stone's interpretation of his movie Alexander from 2004, featuring Colin Farrell, Jared Leto, and Angelina Jolie. Oliver Stone did perpetuate on film the closeness and the sexual nature of Alexander and Hephaestion's relationship. I also want to go into History Hit's Tristan Hughes, who show the ancients on History Hit, whether it be the podcast or anything he does on the History Hit channel on YouTube. Fantastic. I enjoy his content. Tristan Hughes describes that Philip II, Alexander the Great's father, also had male lovers, usually younger, and That should also be noted. In his 2022 article, Hughes describes Phillips' sexual preferences. He has also had a number of younger male lovers, similar to pederasty, sexually attracted to younger, if not children, or what we would term pedophilia. The practice of an older man, the Orestes, taking on an adolescent, youthful-looking lover, Eromenos, was also present at the Macedonian court. This type of relationship was present in Athens and Sparta during the same time. Also, this type of relationship occurred in Japan in the samurai class. So it's not unusual. So, like his father, Alexander and Hephaestion may have had a sexual relationship, but again, there's no concrete or clear evidence enough to make out a definitive conclusion. Oh, I also learned a new word today. Catamite, an ancient and Greek Roman term, a pubescent looking boy or a young man who was in the intimate companionship of an older male, referencing again pederasty, which is pedophilia. However, seeing as how Alexander and Hephaestion were about the same age, I'm not sure catamite would be attributed to Hephaestion in this particular regard. Moving on. I know I mentioned bisexuality, and there's a reason for that. You know what Alexander and Hephaestion did do, though? They married, just not each other. In 324 BCE, Hephaestion married the daughter of Darius III, granddaughter of Sisygambis, Drypaeta. Alexander married Stratara, another daughter of Darius. So not only were they besties or potentially lovers, they were also brothers-in-law. Way to keep in the family, guys. According to Arrian, Alexander wanted to be uncle to Hephaestion's children. Unfortunately for Alexander, he would never become an uncle to Hephaestion's children. In October of 324 BCE, Hephaestion succumbed to an illness that could have either been typhoid or poisoning. Not sure, but there's room for speculation on both. Hephaestion died in Ecbatana, current day Iran, and he was in Ecbatana for games, and fortunately that's where he fell ill with a fever. Arrian describes that Hephaestion's fever had about 7 days and that Alexander was called to his friend's side. Unfortunately, Alexander did not make it in time. He arrived too late. Like most young healthy men, Hephaestion ignored medical advice from his doctor Glossius and then proceeded to breakfast on boiled fowl and a cooler of wine. He fell sick again and kicked the bucket. The assumption is that Hephaestion may have had typhoid. Though he recovered from the illness, the fowl and wine cooler may have perforated or broken his ulcerated intestines, causing internal bleeding and leading to his eventual death. He should have just stuck to soup or broth. Booze doesn't help either. However, it is possible, though not entirely sure, that poison may have been another possible way to kill Hephaestion. No kids, widowed wife, and a bereaved bestie. Rest in peace. Now, again, we know how emotionally attached Alexander was to Hephaestion because of all the military successors under Alexander's belt. Also, Alexander also never lost a battle. There's lots of money that was at Alexander's disposal. And like I said, he was just emotionally wrecked. He lost his soulmate, friend, and confidant. Alexander spent upwards of 10,000 to 12,000 talents, which, equating to 21st century U.S. dollars, that's $200 to $240 million. God damn. Over $200 million on Hephaestion's funeral. He also requested that he become a god. Let's get into those details. Let's just get this in out of the way. Alexander is reported to have not eaten up to 3 days after learning about Hephaestion's death. He threw the most extra, magnificent and grandiose funeral. First off, again, 10 to 12,000 talents, or again, $200 to $240 million. The funeral pyre had multiple levels. Like, I'm telling you, it is massive. But let's get into other details. It was up to 60 meters high, so almost 200 feet. It was square in shape and built in stepped levels. That's 7 levels to get through. First level, 240 ships with golden prows, each designed with armed figures and filled with red banners. Second level, torches with snakes at the base, golden wreaths in the middle and top, and flames surmounted by eagles. It's attributed to Zeus, the eagles. Anyway, third level, a hunting. Fourth level, recounting a battle with centaurs. Fifth love, in gold, it boasted lions and bulls. Sixth level, the arms of the Macedon and Persian royal arms. Seventh level, sculptures of sirens hollowed out to conceal a choir who could sing a lament. Honestly, as extra as I can be, I don't think I can come up with something that grandiose. During the funeral procession, Alexander himself drove Hephaestion's funeral carriage, which was then taken upon Hephaestion's other friend, Perdiccas. I see a Monty Python joke coming. Perdiccas. Oh, Bigasdiccas, but that's more Roman versus Greek. But we have Perdiccas and Bigasdiccas. Alexander did have Hephaestion either cremated and possibly taken to Babylon, or embalmed and also taken to Babylon. Hephaestion was also given divine orders. Alexander wanted to have him turned into a god. The oracle at Siwa, which is located in Egypt, said no, but he could be worshipped as a divine hero, similar to Perseus or Theseus. I'm team Perseus because Theseus is an asshole. As mentioned earlier, Alexander was bereft at Hephaestion's death. Alexander ordered funeral games where there were up to 3,000 athletic participants, as well as literary games. There was an order throughout the empire that a period of mourning must be seen to. Alexander had previously, during their campaigns, made him essentially his second in command. Once Hephaestion was gone, no one was to ever replace him. One other final tribute was conducted by Alexander. On the day of his funeral, Alexander ordered that the sacred flame to be extinguished in the temple. The significance of this is only done on the death of Alexander the Great himself, less than a year later. Alexander himself died in June of 323 BCE, a mere 8 months after his best friend died. I think in spirit, these two men enjoyed each other's company in the Eleusinian Fields, also known as heaven for ancient Greece. Based on the information of Alexander and Hephaestion's relationship, from boyhood in the classroom, to the battlefields, to the marriages, can we say or label Hephaestion as a male lover? Not really. It's too speculative. There's not enough conclusive evidence that the two were sexually intimate. Emotionally, we can say that they belonged to each other, but including a sexual relationship, there's not enough records to say they were. But we also can't say that they weren't. Remember, philos, friend. But there's also the undercurrent of a sexual part. If we were to be loved and favored by the Olympic gods, maybe we can ask them when we get to the Eleusinian Fields. Until then, we can only continue to speculate. Thank you for joining me on this episode. I appreciate your to me in your ear holes. I should be back next week to discuss more sex scandal and shenanigans. I can be reached via email at sexscandalshenaniganspod@gmail.com. Try not to get into any shenanigans, because I just might end up telling your story one day. Until next time, bye.